All right, so NTI Philippians chapter 2, which is on page 350 in my Kindle. How about you guys? What do you have?
Same,
350. All right. The way you operate in the world is a reflection of your faith and your belief. For the way you operate is not action, but the image of the expression of thought. Trust that you do not know yourself because you have not observed that closely until now. Realize that your purpose is to ensure that your faith is placed with the motive you have chosen. Be clear on this purpose and then observe yourself. And one thing we were talking about before I turned on the recorder is that when you start observing to see if your motive and your faith are in the same place, what you might find, if you're normal, is that they're not. And one reason that they're not is because you've never really looked at that before. And, you know, A Course in Miracles says the ego thrives in darkness. But by darkness, it means you're non-looking, you're non-awareness. So if you've never really looked at that before, guess who's thriving over there or what's thriving over there? You know, the wrong mind. So you're going to find out that you're not in harmony. And that's just natural. So again, there's no real reason to be disappointed or no real reason to judge yourself. You just haven't turned the light over into that corner yet, so it has a lot of dirt over there. You know, it's dusty. But that's what Philippians is all about. Philippians is about beginning to look now. And I'm also, just for the sake of the recording, because I said this to you all, but I didn't say it after the recording was on. You know, an example of not having your faith and your motive in the same place would be like if your motive was, you know, I want to be in acceptance of all things, but yet you still get upset when somebody's acting differently than you want them to, because your real faith is, I'd be happy if you'd act the way I wanted you to. So your motive to accept all things and your faith that I need things to be a certain way to be happy are not aligned. And those are the types of things that we start finding when we start observing this.
I just want to say, I think in that regard, that the motive is intellectual, but the faith is emotional.
You know what I mean?
It's like the faith is the habit energy.
Yeah, the conditioning is another word, yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And you were going to say something?
I was going to say something similar to that. So, because I was puzzled, you know, having seen that, because I have such longing. And I would think that having such longing, I would have more on that side than on the other side. And so I started wondering, well, maybe I don't have as good a longing as I thought.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't judge it. I would just, again, it's much easier just to say, you know, I really haven't paid attention here before, and that's why... You know, I mean, imagine if there was a room in your house, any room, that you didn't pay attention to for a year. You'd go in there, it'd be so dusty and so dirty. Even though nobody went in there to dirty it, it would be dirty. So anything you don't pay attention to is kind of out of sorts, right? And that's why we want to start paying attention. Yeah. What is it that you find yourself doing? Why are you doing it? Is that action evidence that your faith is placed with your motive? Or are you finding that you have placed your faith elsewhere? I did the funniest thing yesterday. I told Danielle, I said, you know, I'm still a control freak. Even though I've been letting go and I've been letting go and I've been letting go, I'm still a control freak. And the way I know that I'm still a control freak is that I always take the trash out to the street on the trash day. And Danielle took the trash out this time. And she put it in a different place, and she had the trash can facing the opposite way. So I went out there, I was going to move it to where I always put it, and then I looked at it and I thought, you know what, it's really, there's no reason why it can't be here, I'll leave it. But I still had to turn it around and make it face the other way. I mean, I just, you know, and and that's what, you know, this is saying, really, start paying attention. I just laugh at that, you know, and probably next time, because I saw it and I laughed at it, next time I won't have to. But, you know, there's a number of little things that we do where we're still trying to keep our little universe in control, still trying to keep things the way we want, and we don't even notice. I know you guys probably remember about a year or so ago when I was letting go of the way the cups were put in the cupboard. You remember that? And like now, I don't care at all. See, that is completely gone. But I used to, Danielle always just puts them anywhere, and I would go and open the door and I'd rearrange them all so they were in nice sets. Right? And finally went in, like, why am I doing this? Who cares? And so I started just putting them anywhere. But, you know, there's lots of little things that we do where what's really behind that is we're trying to control our environment. And so if you can start seeing some of the ways you're trying to control your environment, especially the little ways, like turning the trash can a certain way or putting the cups a certain way, you might be able to start letting go of that controlling energy. And then sometimes in bigger things, you'll be able to let go as well. In fact, I am reading the Bible right now because I am writing the Jesus of the New Testament MPP course now. And there is a verse in the Bible where Jesus says, someone who cannot be trusted with something little also cannot be trusted with something big. And so, you know, if I can't leave the trash can facing a certain, you know, if I have to have the trash can facing a certain way, when something huge comes up in my life, what's the likelihood that I'm going to be able to let it be as it is without trying to control it in some way? So it really is worthwhile. What I got out of that scripture is it really is worthwhile, even though it sounds silly, to start letting go in the little places. Because as you learn to let go in these little bitty things, then you're more prepared when something big happens, right, to let go and let it be as it is. So towels, the way towels are folded. Yeah, that's a big one. So, verses 5 to 11. Be careful that you do not judge that which you see and observe. Separate yourself from the body. See the body as not you. See it merely as evidence of thought that is in your mind. See it as a learning device and nothing else. The feeling that I got when I was scribing this is I was kind of asked to have kind of a scientific curiosity, like, huh, I wonder where I really do have my faith. And the way I'm going to find out where I really do have my faith is by watching what this body does. And the reason the language had to change to what this body does is because if we say, I'm going to watch what I do, we're much more likely to fall into judgment. So I'm watching what this body does, right? It's a slight difference, and it makes it a little easier to observe without the judgment. But we are still trying to discover where we still have our faith in places that we don't want it. But even that little bit of detachment, I'm going to watch what this body does, it can be very, very helpful. And then you're like the curious scientist, you know, studying the specimen, you know, right, to find out what the causes are.
I just saw something on Facebook. Michael Jeffries posted it. It said, if you can be aware of it, you're not it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really helpful. It's really just a quick bridge, you know. If you're aware of it,
then you're not, because you're something that's aware of it, right?
The awareness. So if you're aware of it, it's not you.
Right. Right. And so that would be true of this body. If you can watch this body, let's see what this body does.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. When you look at the body, which is showing you what you have asked to see, what is it that you discover? What do you learn about your mind? Realize now who you are as you watch this body and learn from it. Realize that you did not know, and so you lived in ignorance before. But now you do know, and it is your will to correct the ignorance you lived by before. Now, what this paragraph is specifically pointing back to, even though it doesn't say it, is Ephesians. It's pointing back to the process that we learned in Ephesians. We learned, first of all, that we are that process, and that process is the process of, you know, whatever we focus on with passion, we are sending out into the world. It helps to paint the picture of the world, plus it comes back. And what this is saying is, remember what you are now. Remember, you're not a person. You're this process. And don't forget that. And with that in mind, that you're this process, and you know how you want to use yourself, use the process that you are. You know, to use the language of the way of mastery, you want to create, you might know the way of mastery better than me. What is it, the good, the beautiful, the, what are those three words he uses?
Good, beautiful, and the holy, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah,
you only want to create the good, the beautiful, and the holy, or whatever those words are he uses. You don't want to be creating the attack. You don't want to be creating the defense. You don't want to be creating the fear. You know this. So now that you know who you are, and you know what you want to do with what you are. Let's observe and see what's happening, right? Because, you know, you're not ignorant anymore. And so let's pay a little more attention to what's going on so that you can become aligned with yourself, aligned with your own motive. And that's very different than saying, because you're bad, right? It's not what he's saying, but what is being said is if you're not aligned with what you want, you're at odds with yourself, right? And that's going to create conflict. That's going to create pain. That's going to create suffering. The only way to be joyous is really to be fully in harmony with yourself. And so that's the reason we're watching. Now that we understand a little more about what we are, we're watching to see if we are now in harmony with ourselves and only creating the good, the beautiful, and the holy, or whatever those words are in the way of mastery. Okay, so again, starting with verses 12 to 13. Realize now who you are as you watch this body and learn from it. Realize that you did not know, and so you lived in ignorance before. But now you do know, and it is your will to correct the ignorance you lived by before. Be grateful for this body and all it is teaching you. For in partnership with this learning device, you will correct the mind. You will bring faith into alignment with motive through your own desire to do so. That's also a very interesting paragraph because, of course, what the wrong mind wants to do is judge. You know, judge what is seen. If I see myself having to turn the trash can around, you know, because it needs to face the way that I always put it. I called myself a control freak, but I did it in laughter. But ego wants to do is it wants to call me a control freak in judgment. It doesn't want to laugh about it. You know, it wants me to feel really guilty for having to turn that trash can around. But this is a completely different attitude. This is saying be grateful for what it shows you. Be grateful that you saw that you had to turn that trash can around. You know, be grateful that you saw you needed this and that you needed that and that you needed that. Because as you see these things, it's seeing these things that's going to help you get into harmony. If you don't see these things, you stay out of alignment with yourself and the suffering continues. And you know you don't want that, so you might as well be grateful that you're seeing them rather than judging yourself for them. Verses 14 to 18. Do not be personal with the body as you watch it and observe it. Do not feel that you are looking at you. I tell you, the body that you observe is not you. It is merely an expression of your thought. You are the process of creation that is God. You are a mind and spirit that is not in the world. Separate yourself from the body in order to observe it. Observe it in order to learn what you want to learn about yourself. One crazy little symbol that's kind of helpful for me when I read that paragraph is to imagine a little Gina that's run by a remote. And I'm actually the one up here with the remote, right? I'm not the little Gina. But what I'm doing is I'm noticing what I'm doing with the remote by watching the little Gina, right? And I can tell, you know, I must be getting into this a little too much because little Gina's hitting little Tom, you know, something, and I wouldn't do that if I wasn't getting into the story a little too much, right? So you're watching, but he's saying that this really isn't you. So just think that I hit Tom, that's a completely different feeling than, oh, little Gina hit Tom, I must be getting too much into the story. You know what I mean? You're back a little bit.
Much closer to truth.
Yeah, you're stepped back a little bit. You're still at a place where correction can happen, and correction still needs to happen. But it's back enough that maybe that guilt isn't there, and therefore the correction can happen. Because guilt actually blocks correction.
Keeps you going.
Yeah, so in order for a true correction to happen, then the if you'll forgive the word wrong action, because I don't mean it with judgment, but the wrong action needs to be seen without the judgment, and then the correction can happen. Another way to think of wrong action also is if we were all going to go to this Black Eyed Pea to eat after this, And I was telling you, well, what you need to do is you need to go down to the corner here, and then you need to take a left on West. You're going to go up to 27th Street, and then you're going to take a right. Well, let's imagine you go up to 27th Street, and you take a left. That's a wrong action, right? Because it's not going to get you where you want to go. Doesn't mean you're guilty. So lots of people associate the word wrong with guilt. Wrong does not necessarily mean guilt. And in fact, usually when Spirit is teaching, it definitely doesn't mean guilt. But what it means is it's not getting you where you want to go. It's the wrong way, you know, right? And so correction needs to happen. If you want to get to the black IP, you know, you need to turn around and go the right way, or else you're not going to get there, right? So again, we're watching this body to find out where it's not aligned, or you could call that wrong action, where it's not aligned, but not so that we can find guilt. It's so that we can just correct and get aligned, because that's what we want. Verses 19 to 24. When you observe the body with the purpose of learning, you do not observe alone. The one who knows you and teaches you observes with you, so you may learn. Call on this one and ask him your questions. He will lead you to find answers, for his purpose is the same as yours. So again, that would be referring to the Holy Spirit, but it doesn't need to be the Holy Spirit. If someone's comfortable praying to Jesus, it can be Jesus. If someone's comfortable praying to Buddha, it can be Buddha. If someone's comfortable praying to the universe, it can be the universe. But it's just that every now and then, when we're still really identified with the personality, there's a feeling of weakness, a feeling of helplessness, a feeling of I can't do this. And the reason there's that feeling is because we're identified with the personality. That's the reason. So it's helpful to get assistance from the divine, whether you call it the higher self, Jesus, Buddha, Holy Spirit, it doesn't matter. But when you tune into that divine, you start feeling that strength of the divine. And then that helps you not to be the little weak one who can't do this, right? It gives you patience if you need patience. It gives you forgiveness of yourself if you need forgiveness of yourself. It's able to lend you whatever you feel like you don't have on your own. It's able to provide that for you. So having a divine symbol that you can pray to is often very helpful. Verses 25 to 30. Honor yourself as you observe. Keep your purpose clear in mind. If you notice judgment or guilt because of the evidence you find, know you have lost the perspective of learning. Take a break and rest in quiet, recalling your purpose in mind. When you feel clear, return again in joy, for the work you do is the care of your mind and your own healing. So, you know, one attitude is I'm just trying to learn where I'm not in harmony so that I can get in harmony. And the other attitude is, oh, you bad, you know, bad girl, you know, you never can get this, you're so stupid, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's saying, whenever you start notice that second attitude coming, pause. Remember, you know what, I'm really just here because I want to be in harmony with myself. I'm really just here to learn. I'm just here to make some, you know, helpful corrections. And then when you feel like you've shifted back into that, then go back into the observing. But it doesn't really do any good to continue to observe the body if you're in that judgment mode. That's just not helpful. So take a break from the observing if that kicks in. You know, make that shift back into why you're observing. And then when you feel you've made the shift, you can go back to it. All right, why don't we do NTI Philippians 3? Is that all right? It is important to remember that the world is not real. All that you see and the way that you see it is a reflection of thoughts in the mind. I am not here to take away what you see. That is a decision you will make when you are ready. But I am here to teach you to see everything that you see differently. So listen to me and practice what I teach. Through this, sadness is replaced by joy. I have asked you to look at yourself by looking at the body, which represents the thoughts that are foremost in your mind. You may find this difficult because you believe you are this body. I ask you to step back and remember who you are. This is a time for quiet, a time for closing the eyes. This is a time for resting, relaxing, breathing, and slowing down. This is a time for putting the world and words aside and for focusing on the feelings within you. What do you notice when you look and take inventory of your feelings? When you invite them into your presence, what do you see? I tell you that without words or circumstances of the world, you will find many feelings within you. There will be a feeling of guilt and a desire to blame. There will be fear, an urge to defend and the thought to attack. There will be sadness, loneliness, and a feeling of being cut off. All of these feelings you find floating within your consciousness without attachment to a specific event or thing. And now, go deeper. Dive below these feelings you have found. Ask what else is there for you to see. You may seem to come to a very personal feeling. It may seem strong, like a wall. This feeling tells you that you are what you are not, so do not pause to listen to it. Ask the wall to open like a door. Tell it you've come to hear the truth. As the wall opens, pass through, willing to discover what was hidden. As you pass through, you will notice that you feel lighter, as if heavy burdens have been lifted from you. Continue walking and notice the joy. It's a feeling that feels natural and light. Then stand quietly within the room you have entered. Ask all that is there to come and show itself to you. What you experience now, bathed within the light, is the truth at the level of the heart. This is who you are. So what that little meditation was talking about, and I experienced it as I scribed it, when I first went within, the very first thing that I hit is what I would call the projections. And in that moment, they weren't projected outward. You know, like it wasn't a specific story about someone that I was angry at and blaming. But as I looked at the projections, the emotional projections within, you know, I could just find there was just fear there. There was just guilt there. There was just, you know, blame there. There was just loneliness. All these things were just there. And then it asked me to move beyond the projections and see what I found next. And it talks about this wall, something very, very personal. That would be the belief in the self. You call it the false self. The personal self. And a Ramana would call it the I thought, right? But the projections, the guilt and all of that, they're projected out of this I thought. So that's why they're projections, even though they're just emotional ideas. They're projections, and it's this personal self thought. That's what seems like the wall. That's what seems like you just can't get past it. And if you can't get past it, then you're kind of stuck in the world of the projections, right? But in this meditation, what it asked is, it said, imagine that the wall is just like a door. It's not a wall, it's like a door. And if you ask it to open, it opens. And then the asking to open happened, and then we walked through the wall right past the personal self, and then we're just in this free space of light and joy, and you know, no projections. Just the natural self is really what's happening. So that's what this meditation is really pointing at. And this happened for me before I knew any of the words that I just used to describe them. I don't know if I'd even heard the word false self yet, or you know. So this was like my first discovery of that wall. Before then, I'd only was learning about things from the projection side. Like forgiveness happens on the projection side. Forgiveness doesn't need to happen on the other side of the wall where there is no personal self, right? So this was my first time seeing that the personal self is the problem, right? The idea of a personal self is the problem. So continuing on with verses 12 to 14. You are not perfect in your own perception because of the feelings you found outside the door. Those feelings you find manifest within the world. So the projections are further projected. The world is a place that seems to give cause to those feelings, but that is the illusion of the world. You found those feelings in you without cause, and that is why you see them in the world. You are looking through the filter of your mind. Oh, I got something great to tell you guys. Maybe it's not that great, but it seemed great to me. I told you I went to see the Son of God on Friday. After I went to see the Son of God, and it's like a 2.5-hour movie, and I do love the Jesus movies. And like, you know, some people when they watch and they can still only hear the Christian interpretation and they hate them, but my mind has learned to reinterpret it. And like, so I'm hearing truth the whole time. And I yeah. Yeah. But I'm hearing truth the whole time. So like I'm getting high off this movie, you know? And when I left, I mean, it was like I left with a temporary enlightened mind, but I was so in love with everyone and I was looking at everyone and they were looking right back at me and everyone was smiling and everything was beautiful and it was just great. The next day, I went to see Nonstop, which Nonstop is a movie about somebody is killing someone every 20 minutes on this plane unless they transfer $150 million to a bank account, and the air marshal is trying to figure out which of the passengers is doing it. And so for 2 hours, you're looking at every single person with suspicion, trying to figure out which one is the bad guy, right? I noticed when I left that movie, everybody looked suspicious, especially people with phones, you know. And I asked Ron, and even after about 20 minutes, this was still happening, I said, Ron, does everybody look suspicious to you? And he said, yeah. So the reason I say this is exciting, because it happened 2 days in a row, I realized just having my mind, my attention, my awareness focused on a Jesus story for 2.5 hours had one effect in the way I saw the world. Focusing on this nonstop suspicious story for 2 hours had another effect on how I saw the world. Both days I was at the same theater. Both days I walked out by people just, you know, hanging around the bathrooms and the, you know, popcorn place. The first day I was in love with all of them and they were all glowing and I was glowing. The second day they looked suspicious. So it shows what the filter of your mind does. I mean, just going to a movie, it really shows.
Because especially with what I'm looking at MPP right now, which is Buddhist teachings, which is a lot of the instructions to refrain from that type of stuff. Yeah. Do you find, in all honesty, do you find that it's helpful to stay away from a movie like that, or that it can be informative, that it can show, you know, that it can...
Well, I would actually say that depends more on where you are on the path. Like, I think it was totally okay that I went to that movie. You know, I don't think it would ever affect me in the long run. That was a temporary effect and not believed and so not truly harmful. However, it is true that people who really focus a lot on these negative sensory impressions things, it can, you know, be, especially if you're looking at it every day, and that's all you're focusing on, that can definitely affect how you look out on the world. And you can tell that, by the way, it affected me just temporarily. So like if you never get your head out of the gossip or out of the attack stories or out of the, you know, you're going to be looking at the world with so much suspicion all of the time, and that isn't helpful. So it does matter what you pay attention to. Yeah, that's right.
Like you say, where you're at.
At a certain point. Well, at a certain point. I mean, I would never be attracted to be looking at that stuff all the time anyway, right? I just wouldn't be attracted. Right. And the fact that I went to a movie is not harmful to me. Yeah. Yeah, and I would...
I still kind of like horror movies, but I used to really be into horror movies. And then still have some conflict with, like, some of the music that I like. It's like... kind of like horror movies.
Yeah.
You know, and like, yeah. Still like it, but I've just found the more spiritual, the more awakened I become, and things like that. It's just, it's less appealing. I mean, I still, and when I do listen to it or watch a movie like that, I'm not as attached to like the feeling. So.
Yeah.
But it's not something that I want to be in that.
Well,
I guess I just know that it's not healthy for me to be submerged in that all the time.
Yeah, and if it had been just me, I would never have gone to see Nonstop. Not that I mind it. I mean, I enjoyed it. But the truth is, I have a partner. You know, Ron, who doesn't have the same purpose of me, and a part of what feels right for me is thinking of him also. He went and saw Jesus with me on Friday. I went and saw Nonstop with him on Saturday. You see how that worked?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But if there was no Ron, Regina probably never would have gone to see Nonstop. I just wouldn't even have been interested. Yeah. Yeah, and it was an exciting movie, and I understand it's just a movie, so it's not a problem. But I thought it was very interesting the way, again, just staring at something for two.
Yeah. 'Cause
I give myself to a movie. You do too. You know what it's like to give yourself to a movie, and so you can see the effect when you walk out of the theater of how your perception has changed temporarily.
Yeah, often you take on the role of the main character.
Yeah,
a lot of times I notice that when I watch a movie. So after the movie, I kind of feel like the main character.
Yeah.
Like, got all the emotional
investment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, so what this is saying then, to bring it back, what this is saying is, if you believe that you're the false self, then you're only looking from the wall outward, right? You're not looking back behind you at where the light is. You're looking from the wall outward. So you are looking through guilt, blame, defense, attack, loneliness, feeling cut off. And all of this is coloring how you see the world. So if you walk up to Regina one day, and maybe she's lost in thought, but you say, hey, Regina, blah, 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 and you know, whatever you're saying, and she just doesn't even respond, your immediate thought is, she doesn't like me, you know, or something like that. Because of the filters that you're looking through, right? That's what this is saying. This is saying that your perception is completely colored by what's outside the door or the wall, because you think you are the door or the wall and you're only looking in that direction.
I think it's really great also. It seems, I don't know if it's just at this point in the book, but that you need eventually, so much about it is unlearning, but there has to be an introduction to your true self eventually, or else, you know, all you're doing is trying to keep stuff at bay.
Yes.
So it's nice that you start, you know, it's kind of like an introduction to you, very graceful.
Yes.
Introduction to your true self.
Okay, so starting with sentence 7 again. I have come to teach you to see differently. So I say, look again. That which you see is only at the surface. Go deeper to see what is truly there. Okay, so what this is saying is, instead of jumping up in the morning and eating your breakfast real fast while you watch the news and running out into your day, because if you do that, you're going to be at the level of false self, and you're going to look at the world and you're going to interact with the world from there. Instead of doing that, take time every day to go deeper. Get into your inspired self. Get into your true self. You know, whether you do that through meditation, contemplation, you know, whatever works for you. Take time every day to go past that personal self, because you can. And you may not stay there. You may not become enlightened and stay there. But you can go past that personal self every day and touch your real self. And it's saying, do that every day, because that's going to change how you see the world. But if you don't take the time to do that, if you just get into your busyness, you're going to be seeing the world through all of those other ideas, and you're going to be interacting with the world in that way.
It's kind of like the difference if you don't eat breakfast and rush out and try to go to work or whatever, you're going to do things a lot different than you
Yeah, or in a way, this is saying, so start every day with the Jesus movie instead of the nonstop movie.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because a lot of different things work for me. Sometimes it's meditation, sometimes it's even just listening. Even just listening to you talk on recording on your website or
Reading something.
Or something like
that.
If I start my day like that, then I'm much better state of mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That reminds me of my brother's. Grandmother was informing me as a cutter.
Yes.
She's full of anxiety. She's just, she's a real super smart gal. 4.0 average. She's going to CC right now and has a job in the library. I mean, that she's just so anxious. And she's kind of like a wrinkle. She always was homeschooled. She didn't want to be around other people and stuff like that. But it just hurt me to hear that. She was full of anxiety with a cutter. So I try to send some books that would do just what you were saying, start out every day with this kind of other way of seeing and maybe not get caught in all that other stuff. And so I explained it to him, you know, how to present it to her in the meetings in a few days. And then he brings back the book like about a week later. Daughter, mother, was with him. And so I said, well, what happened? He said, you turned up to me. Her mother says, she said it wasn't her thing. I was discouraged. I mean, I was trying to give her a new vision to start seeing and, you know, open up that door, open that wall, but it's not her thing. I thought to myself, what is her thing? To cut? You know, I was just it just did a number on me, and then I had to begin to talk to myself, and I said, well, this, it's okay, except what is, maybe this isn't what's meant for her to get her out, whatever it is, maybe it's something else, just let go. It took me a long time to get through it, because I thought she was going to see some light, shall we say, and want to do it. Like you said, start each day with just a little tiny bit of reading to change the way you can see. But anyway, just it rushed me for a while, but I had to just let it go and see.
Yeah.
Maybe this wasn't what's going to be meant for her to get her out of whatever she needs to. Maybe she has to go through this right now. I have to say to myself.
Yeah. All right, so verses 15 to 16. Pause for a moment when you look at that body in the world. Look at what it is doing and what it is thinking. Is it aware of the real you, the feelings beyond the door? Or is it using the world to attach meaning to the feelings outside the door? Where is the body focused? See the body as the tool that tries to give meaning to your feelings. If you feel guilt, it finds a scenario that seems to create the guilt. But the guilt was already in the mind. And this reminds me of what you're always talking about, Tom, the invitation. Right? That's what this is saying, is that if you believe in guilt, you will find guilt. Whether you see yourself as guilty or someone else is guilty or the government is guilty, you know, or the newscasters is guilty, if you believe in guilt, you will find guilt. But if you are on the, if you're focused on who you really are and you know the innocence of that, you're not going to find guilt anywhere. Same stories running about, right? But whether you find guilt or not depends on whether you know who you are or whether you think you're the false self. That makes all the difference in the world. As you see the body do these things, remember who you are. You are looking at the reflection of thoughts in your mind. You are giving that which you receive. The feeling of guilt comes from you, then goes into the world, and returns just as it was given. See what you are. See that it all comes from you. Then see that you are not the feelings outside the door. See that those feelings are attached to nothing. Take the time to walk through the wall. Find yourself and loose those feelings into the world. So, you know, this is still talking about perception. So you could argue this is still talking about projection. And in fact, when A Course in Miracles, when the original versions of A Course in Miracles were out, it talked about the Holy Spirit projects. Later, that was changed to be consistent so that the Holy Spirit always extends and the ego projects. But that was in the editing process. In the very, very beginning, it used to talk about Holy Spirit projects. Because, again, the world is just perception, which means the world is always going to be a projection, you know? But is it a projection of the right mind or the projection of the wrong mind? That makes a huge difference. One is reflective of truth, and the other one is purely false. So it's saying take the time to remember who you are, take the time to know yourself, and then let that be projected onto the experience of your day.
That is a real great tidbit of information. I had no idea that that was in the editing process.
Okay.
And it seems to me like I would have enjoyed it the way it was originally.
Some people, that's why the Sparkly and the original edition are popular with a lot of people. They actually feel they understand it better before the editing process. Yeah. And my personal opinion, now we're talking personal opinion, I think some things were better before they were edited, and I think some things were better after the edit. So, you know, I'm not real concerned. So that's why I still like looking at both. I think reading both the original edition and the Foundation for Inner Peace edition gives the clearest picture. But there's definitely edits, and looking at both versions can be helpful.
And who did the edit?
Well, the original version that came out is what they call the Ur-Text, and that was when Helen Schuckman read her handwritten notes to Bill Thetford, and he typed them up, so that's the most unedited, although I think some people feel that maybe Helen really didn't read everything, so maybe even the first unedited was kind of edited in the process, but I don't know how we could know that. But anyway, that's the first unedited, and then Jesus told Helen to let Bill edit it and to take it. There was a lot of personal information if you read the Ur-Text. Like, she would be right in the middle of taking dictation on the miracle principles, and she'd start thinking about somebody at work. And so then her and Jesus would talk about that person at work, and then they come back to the miracle principles. And it's just kind of, you know, all over the place. So Jesus told Helen to let Bill edit it and take out all of the personal information. And so all that personal information is taken out, and that's the Bill Thetford edition, which some people, you know, one version that is published is the Sparkle, which I think you have. And then another version of the same one is the original edition. Those two are really the same, with comma differences maybe, but they're the same, and you can read them side by side. Then after that is when Helen met Ken Wapnick. And I believe Helen, Bill, and Ken, all three felt that it wasn't done being edited yet, but Bill was kind of, I think, tired of the editing process. So Ken and Helen did another edit, and that's the Foundation for Inner Peace version. So it went through a few different edits. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so we are done with Philippians 2 and 3. And, you know, there are a few things we could do. You know, the Philippians 3 was still talking about watching the body and seeing if you're aligned with yourself. And then Philippians 4 is talking about take the time to get in touch with your true self every day on the other side of the wall, and then allow that beingness to be projected onto the world instead of coming from your false self. So, if we merge the two together, Here's the assignment. Okay? We're going to continue to watch the body this week to see if we're aligned with our motive. But we're not going to watch the body as the false self, finding guilt and blame with what we see. We're going to take the time to get in touch with our true self, to get in touch with our purpose, to get in touch with our inspired. And then from there, we're going to watch the body. Think you can do that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, watch the body from the right mind. But taking that time is important.
With love and compassion.
With love and compassion. Again, and just the purpose to discover, oh yeah, there's a place where I could, you know, not be so controlling. I don't have to turn the trash can around, you know. And, oh yeah, I see there. I what I really want is to accept all things, but right now I really wish she would act different. And I see that. Okay, I can let that go. But again, doing it with that right mind instead of the wrong mind.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's really, it's like the balancing of what's going on in the mind. The body is just the balance. It's showing you the picture.
It's showing, yes.
This equals, you know, this.
Yes.
You know, this action is just information. It shows you what's going on back at the ranch.
Yeah, and in fact, I would suspect that if you really spend a good amount of time getting in touch with yourself and staying in touch with yourself, you probably aren't going to find near as many out of harmony actions that day. You'll just be naturally letting things go because of where your state of mind is. So what I'll do is stop the recorder.
So this will be a 3-week assignment.
Oh, that's right. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, 3-week assignment. That's good. So you can,
plenty of time.
Yeah, plenty of time.